following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Breaking Banks. We're live in New York from the Google offices today, which is pretty exciting. We've been here attending an unconference. Now, if we're going to get to what an unconference is at a moment, but really, we've been trying to solve all the world's problems of payments and electronic payments, and looking at the future of the mobile space, the wallets, the cards, the payment networks, banks, and we've had a really eclectic group of people collected around this, brainstorming the future of the industry and some of the problem-solving stuff. So it's been a very interesting session out of the Google offices here in New York on 8th Avenue. So it's been a lot of fun. First up, we're actually going to invite someone from Google to join us, Jonathan Weiner. Jonathan, tell us about your role at Google and tell us about how the unconference came to be here today.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, Brett. So I work within the payments and wallet team at Google. I've been here for about a year and a half. I was part of the management team of a company called TXVIA, which Google acquired. Last year, NiPay, who I've been supporting for a while, asked to have a conference here. And my perspective is that especially from a Google perspective, is that, you know, relationships in payments and financial services is key. And I think at Google we understand that in order to do some of the things that we want to do, we have to really partner with the ecosystem. So part of it is to bring that ecosystem to Google, to have, everybody share their thoughts around, you know, what people think is the future of payments and the innovations that need to happen. And from a Google perspective, we get to hear a lot of those things from a lot of different third parties, from banks to startups. So, you know, it's really fascinating. It's a really fascinating to be here, to listen to all the people, to partner with NiPay and consult Hyperion. So it's been a great experience, and the other thing I would say is I'm a big believer in having, you know, in person events. Right, there's a lot of technology out there. People can communicate over things like Twitter and Skype and obviously Google Plus and Hangouts and technologies like that, but especially in payments and financial services, it's pretty complex. And, you know, a lot of that trust and open communications around the space, in my mind, has to happen in person. So the unconference is actually a perfect venue and setting and opportunity to have those conversations.
It's an interesting analogy because in the payments world, you have to bridge this physical location for payments as well as now obviously e-commerce and m-commerce and doing this sort of stuff. So, you know, in terms of Google's commitment to payments overall, you hinted at it there. You've got to be connected to the ecosystem. But where does Google see the business being driven, or where do payments fit in from Google's long-term medium-term perspective in terms of the way they bring community and individuals and data together?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a recognition that, 93% of commerce is driven offline, and ultimately, Google needs to be there, and right now Google does an incredible job and can show the ROI for that 7% of commerce that happens online. So the question is, how do you close the loop for that 93% of where commerce is happening offline? So a lot of the things and the tactics and the strategy sort of revolves around that overarching theme. Payments is a big part of that. The wallet strategy is a big part of that. So in terms of commitment, Google's there with the commitment. I mean, this is an area
and
that,
it's a long-term thing, right?
It's a long-term thing. It gets obviously when you start talking about data and merchants and banks, these things get very complicated and very complex. So I can't go into all the details around that strategy, but just in terms of Google's commitment in this space, it's there, and it's a long-term vision.
Absolutely. Well, look, thank you very much for your support of the event and letting us do the show from here today. We really appreciate it. Let's ask David from MyPay to join us at this point. And David, you and Jonathan really sort of and Dave Birch sort of put this. You are the brainchilds behind this this unconference event. But tell me, what makes New York an interesting place to do an event like this on payments?
Well,
tell us about NYPay as well.
Well, NYPay is a group. Am I coming through here? Good. NYPay is a group that's organized to take some of the things that were accomplished at the unconference, but put them in a setting that doesn't require a whole commitment of day. So we have events 3 or 4 times a year, 5 times a year. We help sponsor other events. It was organized a few years ago with a recognition that the world of payments, which had been rather staid and predictable for quite a long time, was changing radically. And the notion of it was to provide a forum outside of the typical industry forums, which tended to be aligned by verticals. The merchants would meet in one place, the ATM people would meet in another place, and so on, to provide a place for those folks to get together. And since I took over running NYPay, I've been trying to broaden that to include people outside of the typical payments verticals. As I said, get more merchants involved and get acquirers involved and so on and so forth, startups. New York's quite good for that. Its startup community has grown quite a bit in the last few years. Bloomberg was very good at encouraging that. And when I fortuitously met Dave Birch at a conference a couple of years ago, and he suggested porting an idea of an unconference that he'd had in that they'd held several times quite successfully in UK over to New York, I leapt at the notion. And I'd had a relationship with the folks at TXVIA. They'd been big supporters of NYPay all along. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if they could host it? And the stars aligned, and we're on our second year, and I couldn't be more pleased.
So what was there a specific outcome you wanted from this, or was it just a matter of getting industry players together to talk about the problems and solutions?
Well, I think a large part of it was the latter. On a purely parochial basis, it helped NYPay build its brand. I mean, brand building is important. And anybody who wants to join NYPay, it's free, nypay.org, so there's my pitch. But it's really interested people who recognize that things are going to be much different tomorrow than they were before, and giving them a way that they can discuss that, exactly what we're trying to do here. And that was the excitement and pleasure at meeting people who shared that and could help NYPay both build its own brand, its knowledge, and facilitate that kind of discussion. So this is good stuff, and as is this radio interview, so thank you.
You're welcome. No problem. It's good as a forum. So in the fintech space and in this payments arena, one of the interesting themes that came up this morning was that payments to some extent they're going to morph. But one of the things that is becoming important is value attached to a payment. Who do you see as the really interesting players emerging? Because New York's become, with Silicon Alley, has become this sort of hotbed of some activity around this. But who do you think will emerge as the new interesting disruptive players in the payment space?
Well, that's one of the challenges I see. In the startup scene, you have a lot of passionate, very talented people. These days, it tends to be very engineering-driven. And the challenge with that, I mean, there's good things, lots of creativity and good technology, but people tend to think only about the technology, become enamored of it. The success in payments is going to be, I think you made a comment in your opening remarks this morning about how payments should become just an almost an afterthought or just a part of the larger movement of commerce. And Jonathan mentioned that when he was speaking. He started talking about payments, but then speaking about commerce. Commerce is what it becomes part of. So I couldn't pick a small player I think has put all the pieces together. There are larger players who I think know what they need to put together, and I suspect with a few acquisitions and some deft execution that someone's going to get it right. But thus far, people are still thinking more about the pieces that make up commerce rather than combining it. And if you're going to get merchant and consumer adoption to switch away from something that very few people, particularly consumers, complain about, you're going to need to pull all those pieces together and make it a commerce experience, not just a payments experience.
Which is why I thought it was interesting that a fairly consistent view that seemed to be coming up was that it's not going to be about one technology or one wallet or one standard that's going to win. The reality is that based on the different types of commerce that we have, that different players will emerge, and you're not going to have a winner in this space. It's going to probably get more complex in the short term.
Yeah, and just one point. One thing that we can agree on, there's very little that we know for sure is going to happen, but I think all of us would agree a mobile platform is becoming more and more dominant in the way people transact and live their lives. A mobile platform makes it much easier for multiple methods to coexist because you're not carrying around bunches of hardware or plastic in your wallet. They're just bits and bytes sitting on your phone, and as long as the code is written well, the experience can be quite good and easy to carry multiple types of payment devices.
Very good. Well, let's ask Dave Birch to join us as well. Dave, you were obviously the founder of this unconference model and worked with Jonathan and David Truder to put this together. But how does an unconference differ from a normal conference?
Well, I can't claim that I invented unconferences. I'd like to with my marketing hat on, but of course I got the idea from
You can say you invented it for payments, right?
But the idea of the art conference is that the agenda is chosen by the delegates on the day. So you invite people in, you give them some stimulating content. You were kind enough to do that for us this morning. And while people are listening to that, we encourage them to think about what they want to talk about during the day, what they want to learn about, what they can contribute through the good old-fashioned mechanism of post-it notes. And then we have a coffee break, we collect up the post-it notes, we group them into sessions, and then we bring together the people who want to talk, discuss, explore those issues. And the reason for doing that is that when you have a non-unconference, the old kind of conference, you're sitting in rows and you're watching someone present some PowerPoint and you're learning from that person, but you're not learning from the 100 other smart people in the room. And the goal of the unconference is to make the kind of learning exponential, right? So today, and of course, I never know what people are going to choose as subjects, right? I mean, I can make a rough guess sometimes, but you know, today so far, I've sat in on discussions around Bitcoin, changing payments regulation in the US, the relationship between social and financial inclusion. I mean, just fascinating stuff. And not only did I learn things, I came away with new ideas, which is, you know, what I want everybody who comes along to the unconference to come away with. Now, you know, it's the modern sharing economy, right? So if I want to get some new ideas out of a space, then I have to come along and put some new ideas in. And to be honest, you know, people have been fantastic about that today. Some of the ideas that have been going around the table, you know, just terrific stuff and genuinely educational, right? Because when you've got half a dozen people who really know something about a topic sitting around a table arguing about it, you can learn more in 10 minutes of listening to those guys than you would do in 2 weeks of sitting through PowerPoint slides. So it's about kind of sharing. It's about being prepared to give up new ideas, to get new ideas back. And, you know, I don't want to sound too, but, you know, the truth is the support that we've had from NYPay and from Google has just been unbelievable. And the atmosphere in there is just, it's terrific, really enjoyable.
So I'd like you to share a little bit of the outcomes that we've seen so far from the conference. You know, the themes that you talked about, has there been some consensus reached? What do you see as some of the interesting things that have come out of this discussion? Where have people centered their thoughts and conclusions
well,
on it?
I mean, remember, I'm from the more sort of technological side of the world. You know, our clients are looking to us to help them exploit the new technologies of payments. And so I'm very curious about the technology trajectory because, you know, you have to make some big bets on this stuff and you don't want to make big investments that are going nowhere. You have to understand a little bit about the long-term technology roadmap. So I have to say I was genuinely surprised this morning about the negativity around the migration towards chip and PIN in the US. I think that was unexpected and very useful information to take back to clients there. I enjoyed the conversation around financial inclusion because I think the payments industry has possibly more of a kind of moral aspect to it than people would recognize, you know, helping people out of poverty by getting them access to formal financial services is understood in emerging economies. In emerging economies, that's seen as being a, you know, an essential government role. Here in the US, you know, there's a lot more work to be done. I thought that was a terrific discussion. And I think some of the ideas that came out of that, our clients could really help with. The regulatory discussion was tough because the regulatory environment in the US isn't absolutely as favorable as it might be to innovations in the payment space. But we were trying to get people to come up with positive suggestions to feed into the Fed consultation. So that was really good. You never know what's going to come up. It just the quality of the discussions was tremendous. And of course, you've got people who are from what people might regard as the incumbents, like Discover and so, what people might regard as the challengers. I mean, they're not really. People like PayPal are actually kind of part of the establishment now as well.
Right.
Google. And then you've got just the absolute new startups, guys like Loop who are down there. So you've got a tremendous mix to draw on as well.
So let me – actually, I might throw back to either David or Jonathan here. Maybe one of you guys can sort of take this, is Dave just mentioned right now about this very different US-centric view to things like chip and PIN and, you know, adoption of various payment technologies, how the US seems to be not so keen to adopt the standards that Europe, for example, EMV and so forth, have adopted. But there's such great innovation taking place here. It was pointed out this morning that AngelList has like 280 mobile payment startups. So, you know, what is it about the US in respect to that culture where we actually don't like having standards imposed upon us when it comes to payments, but we're very open to experimenting with different forms? David True, did you want to take that one?
Yeah, and these will be David's remarks, of course. I mean, I don't pretend to represent anyone else, but the U.S. has long been seen as a place where one can go and remake oneself and start anew. The idea of innovation is very, very strong there. But actually, it's almost consistent with that, is that notion that I do it myself and no one else is involved. And that kind of leads to the American exceptionalism, which I personally may differ with at times, but it's very strong within this country. Look at the huge debate we just had over something reform in healthcare, change in healthcare, that no one would disagree is very much needed, and yet people are willing to shut down the government over it because they didn't want the government imposing. You'll see the very distinct difference between pretty much all the other Western countries where the role of government in setting standards or the role of organization in setting standards is much, much more accepted. And another facet of that is that the institutions required to get these things done, there are far, far more of them. The number of banks per capita here in the U.S., the number of debit networks or all the networks required to agree on standards is far greater. So not only do you have a rejection of anybody coming in from a government or a super level, you also have more and more parties that have to agree.
Okay, so Jonathan, just to finish up with this, what's it like to work for Google in New York versus Google on the West Coast? Is there any cultural differences here?
Cultural differences.
Or is Google its own culture?
Yeah, I would say Google is its own culture across the world, and each office has its sort of, you know, unique personality. And I think it's purposely set up like that to reflect the culture of the country or the city. You know, I can't speak for all the offices, but yeah, I mean, you know, New York has, to me, sort of a lot of energy. It reflects the city. I mean, New York City just has a lot of energy. And, you know, listen, Silicon Valley is a unique place, I think, in the world, right? And, you know, going to the back to your question about, you know, all the innovation that's happening, I think right now the reason why we see so many startups in this space, and I'll just generally label the space commerce, it's at the intersection of payments, financial services, retail, mobile, marketing services, and data. And that is defining commerce. And if you think about all of that intersection and how it's changing commerce, you can imagine all of the innovations and all of the startups that are happening. So I think we're in a unique time. And I think in America, we have this unique place in the country called Silicon Valley, which is unlike no other place in the world, spurs all this innovation.
It is an amazing innovation engine, unparalleled anywhere else in the world. And of course, the ability to raise capital, which is unique to many economies. Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us. David and Dave, thank you for hosting the Young Conference and getting this discussion going. We'll be back right after the break to continue talking about the disruptive fintech and payment space. You're with Brett King, Breaking Banks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
So we're live from New York. In fact, we're live from Google in New York today, talking about the emerging payments market, bank innovation, disruption, fintech, and all of these interesting topics. You just heard from the guys whose brainchild it was for the Young Conference here at Google's headquarters in New York. But now we're going to interview some of the people that have been at the conference participating today. We'd like to start off with JP Nichols. That's Nichols with a H. And JP, you are the CEO of Client Terrific, and also one of the founders of the Bank Innovators Council. Did I get all that right?
You did.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what you do at Clientrific and what is this Bank Innovators Council and what's the objective?
Right, yeah, Clientrific. So, you know, I'm a recovering banker. Spent 20 years helping a small bank grow into a top five U.S. bank. And I originally launched Clientrific to help banks from my domain, which was wealth management. But I've always had one foot in innovation and done a lot of different work. And it's funny how that has dragged me into the payment space, not because I know a darn thing about it, but because that's where a lot of the innovation is happening. And so being in the fintech and innovation space, Will Trout, my co-founder at the Bank Innovators Council, and I, we felt that fintech companies had a lot of support. They had venture capitalists. They had incubators and accelerators, and banks were really on their own. For the handful that could afford their own dedicated innovation labs, that was just fine. But most can't afford that, but they can't afford not to innovate.
So, you know, what's the objective, you know, what do you see happening over the next couple of years with the Innovators Council? Do you see this as becoming a standards organization? Or do you see this as creating discussion that leads to tactical innovation? You know, what are you guys trying to achieve with it?
Right. So we have a virtual whiteboard that keeps getting longer, and things like the things you've just asked about wind up on there. So today we're a membership organization, and we really want to just help banks get together and innovate in ways together that they couldn't do alone. On down the road, we ultimately see it being somewhat of a innovation lab timeshare. So for banks that can't afford their own, they could certainly afford us for a week or two, that sort of thing. You mentioned standards. We do hear that from our members, and we talked about that today at the unconference, right? This lack of standards, or in some cases, imposing standards around other things, would be something. If we could improve that, that would certainly grease the skids for a lot more innovation. We just did a member survey, and loud and clear, the number one thing that our members wanted us to focus on was consumer payments. So again, being dragged back into
that's
that.
That's a good. It's good. Good opportunity here today. Then to get, so get some intelligence, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And a little bit surprising to us was that the second thing was actually affluent clients. So again, right. Coming from the domain that I know, and all this talk of the underbanked, you know, this is the overbanked. but our members see a lot of opportunity there. And then lastly, we asked them where in the innovation process we could provide the most value. And a little bit surprising, it was very front-loaded. It's really about identifying opportunities, finding the white spaces in the marketplace, ideating around those opportunities and problems. And while we think that's great and we intend to deliver what our members ask for, at the same time, we know that's not enough because coming up with ideas is the fun part and the easy part. It's actually implementing them where it really gets hard and where we think we can really help them work together.
So you've got a mix of corporate members and private individuals who are involved or professionals who are involved. Tell us about some of the members. I know you had a big announcement fairly recently around one of the corporate members who've joined, but tell us about the membership mix of the Bank Innovators Council.
Yeah, we do. You know, and that's an interesting and good challenge for us to have. We really want to recruit bank members, and membership is free. It's a freemium model. And then we give corporate members a chance to sponsor sessions. And we have to be really careful with that. If we don't have a safe, curated environment, we really don't have anything. So what we're focused on is partners that want to sponsor kind of some thought leadership and some exploration of a particular topic or domain that might be where they have intellectual property, but we can't allow them to come in and just sell their goods off the shelf, right? That'll never work. So far, we just came in from Boston. Will and I were both there yesterday, Brown Brothers
Chairman. Will is your co-founder?
Yeah, Will Trout, ex-BBVA. And Will and I knew each other from some other innovation circles. And we were both in Boston, and we're co-hosted, hosted graciously by Brown Brothers Harriman, and we had about a dozen different financial institutions and non-bank members had a great discussion and workshop yesterday.
Great. So, you know, let us know as a community. Obviously, we got some pretty good support broadly, and there's a lot of crossover between what the Bank Innovators Council is doing and what we do through Breaking Banks. But, you know, let us know or let the community know, you know, what can we do through the Breaking Banks community today to help you with the Bank Innovators Council just before we go to Mr. Giovino?
Yes. Well, I appreciate that. You know, go to bankinnovatorscouncil.org. And again, membership there is free, and we're very much into open innovation. So we collaborate with a lot of groups. We had a lot of interest from regional and national banking groups. When you look at groups of banks that have memberships, they need to provide kind of programming and ideas, and they want to innovate, and they're not sure how. So there's plenty of room for all of us to work together around that.
Great. Well, thank you, JP, for joining us. Good to be back with you and talking.
Thanks, Brett. Always a pleasure.
Next up, we have David Giovino. David is the Assistant Vice President for Digital Product Marketing and Strategy with Provident Bank. David, tell us a bit about your role at Provident Bank.
Sure, Brett. Thanks for having me on. So, you know, at Provident, you know, the focus is in and around the digital space and, you know, making use of the data that we have to make sure that our clientele are aware of our digital products and services. You know, being at a, competing in a space where we're going against the major money center banks, it's really important to make sure that our clientele is aware of the products and services that we do have and making sure that we're working with our partners to make sure that we're able to get out the products and services that they're offering, to other banks, that we can get those signed up, on board, programmed, and then out to our clientele. And then also making use of digital marketing to be able to actually contact our customers, because as you know, branch traffic is not what it once was. And so, you know, cross-selling and upselling does not happen as much in the branch the way it used to. So now it's really happening in the digital space. And so we're really making sure that we make use of, you know, the digital channels. And then also still, you know, big users of very highly targeted direct mail as well. One of those things that people such as yourself have at times claimed
that. We have
had
debates on this in the past.
Yes, we've had. But, you know, those direct communication channels is really what we're talking about. You know, for banks, actually for any business in reality, are very effective.
We had some very interesting discussion today about payments sort of becoming embedded and these new customer journeys and experiences where the payment disappears or becomes less visible in favor of actually the experience where the payment is embedded. So, you know, it's more about the commerce and the payment. So how does someone like a Provident look at that problem from a future perspective in terms of the acquisition cycle and embedding Provident's, payment product or, you know, its banking products in experiences that are more distributed?
Well, you know, some of the things that get done are, it comes from a standpoint of education. So making sure bank clients are aware of, you know, what technologies and what tools they can use to, let's say, make payments. And so sometimes it's as simple as making sure that, you know, they're getting effective use at using ACH or using wires. And, you know, sometimes these are older technologies that sometimes get forgotten. And so that's, you know, one of those things that we get to focus on. And one thing I just want to point out as a sidebar, having sat next to JP, that is a very cool Bank Innovators Council that it has, and I am a proud member of that organization.
Well, you know, thanks for giving JP another plug, David, and thank you for joining us on the show. And we'd love to have you back talking a little bit more about Provident in the at a future date. Thanks very much for joining us, Damien Bolsan. Is that right? How I produced that, Damien?
Yes, absolutely.
So, Damien, you're the Executive VP for Business Development Operations at Loop. Loop's one of the startups that is here at the Young Conference today. Tell us about what Loop is doing, and I notice you've got a Kickstarter campaign at the moment, so tell us a bit more about that as well.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting us. So pretty much Loop is enabling any smartphone to pay at a physical retail without the need for the merchant to change anything at his point of sale. So today in the US, you have about 12 million locations, and they all have Max Stripe POSs. And you even have, by the way, 50 million readers. And everybody, Google, PayPal, the US carriers with ISIS, Square, they're all trying to change that. We are the founding team of Loop. We're coming from the mobile payment industry. Myself, I was 2 years in charge of the POS strategy at PayPal. Before that, I was in charge of NFC at Nokia for 4.5 years. The other founders of Loop are mobile payment veterans. George Warner invented the Max Stripe POS 35 years ago. And when we kind of realized that nor PayPal, nor Google, nor anyone could really enable anyone to pay with his phone today, and not before kind of a few years, we decided to create that new company Loop on an incredible technology that George Warner invented.
So tell us about the technology, Demi.
So the technology is in fact fairly simple. It enables you to store very securely a magnetic card onto a secure area in a mobile phone accessory today, tomorrow in the phone, and transmit it wirelessly to the magnetic head that is on all these POSs. It's called magnetic induction. And the beauty of this technology is it enables you to solve one of the main issues of magnetic card. Magnetic cards is a great transmission technology because you have so many readers. It's a very bad storage issue. So we solve the storage issue by storing all your credit card in a very secure area that, in fact, we use from the NFC industry.
So the dongle sits on top of the existing smartphone, but you don't swipe it through the existing
cards. You don't need to swipe it. It's really like NFC. You just present it about 4 inches from the reader where you would swipe, and you pay. And you choose your card. So it says, today I'm going to pay with my Amex. If you want to use your debit card, merchant is happy, use your debit card.
Pretty cool.
You could use a gift card. You could use anything. And yes, as you noted, we have a Kickstarter campaign right now where if you go to looppay.com, you can pledge for getting either a fob that connects to your phone or a charge case, which also is giving you twice more battery on your phone. And that's a product we expect to deliver for Kickstarter members end of December and in February for the charge case.
How much are you trying to raise on Kickstarter?
So right now we're trying to raise $100,000, but we have about, we're at $60,000, $70,000 right now.
Fantastic.
With 1,100 backers, but we're hoping to get to 3,000 or 4,000 by the end of the campaign in 2 weeks.
So good news on the recent SEC ruling that makes this sort of stuff a lot easier to do in the U.S. now, right? Where are you guys based?
So we're Boston.
Okay, in Massachusetts. Very good. Well, Damien, thanks for it. Loop sounds really interesting because this big problem in the U.S. has been about, do we swap out the POS for EMV? And this could be part of the solution here in the U.S. So thank you very much for joining the show today.
Thank you so much.
Up next, we have David Schroepfer.
Schroepfer.
I'm
sorry. Deceptively silent.
I'm sorry. Deceptively silent. Now, David, we met a few months ago, and you've got you've published a book not that long ago called The Smartphone Wallet on Amazon, and you've also got one called Google Wallet and the New Retail Ecosystem.
Yes, that's right.
Right. And so tell me about you've got your own group called the Luciano Group that you're working with. You're the head of mobile commerce there, but what sure. do you do in the day job, and what brought you to the UnConference today?
Sure. Well, Brent, good to see you again, and thank you for having me on the show. My role at Luciano Group is essentially we're a consulting firm, and I founded the firm with Tom Luciano about 8 years ago. And about 4 years ago, I took the firm into the direction of mobile commerce. I've worked in telecom, and I've worked in the payments industry, and those two were effectively slamming into each other in the form of mobile commerce. So my job is to look at my clients' assets. What is their business model? What part of the ecosystem do they play in? And then try to look ahead. What is mobile commerce going to look like? Who are the players going to be? And then try to assess, is this a threat for my clients? Is it an opportunity? Should they buy something? Should they sell something? Should they build something, et cetera? So that's essentially the work that I do at my firm.
And you're head of mobile commerce. So what have you learned today at the UN conference in terms of where mobile wallets and mobile payments are going that has struck a chord?
Well, I think the most salient takeaway is that Dave Birch is a very funny guy.
He is. He tells a great story, doesn't he?
He absolutely does, yes. The UnConference has been a unedited sharing opportunity between a number of different true experts in the space, which has been interesting to listen to. There have been conversations about almost every corner of this ecosystem, and I think it's done a lot of effort to bring a lot of those ideas together in a way that we can all understand and discuss them. Bitcoin is, you asked me what is the area that I've learned about today. Bitcoin has been one of those few areas in this space that I have been grappling with. What is it? Who runs it? Where does it come from? Is it going to succeed or fail in the future? And it's sort of something that sits on the fringe of all of this, you know, moving money around. It's part of it. But to answer your question, that's been one of the more interesting topics that I've seen today.
So just quickly before we go to the break, you want to give a plug out for your book and how people can grab your book on Amazon?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you for that. The book is called The Smartphone Wallet. It's available on Amazon, and Barnes & Noble also carries it. It was written in 2010, so thankfully a lot of what I said in there is still true today, that the players that provide a service to a consumer that the consumer wants, that solve a problem for a consumer, are the services that are going to succeed.
Right.
And that's pretty much been what we've seen among all the players that have come, and a few of them have already gone. If they don't solve a problem for the end user, they're not very relevant.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining the show today. We're going to head to a break right now, and after we come back, we'll be talking about getting over some of the hurdles from a regulatory and technical perspective in terms of what comes next over the next 5 to 10 years in the payment space. Thank you very much all for joining the session. We just had JP Nichols, Dave Jabino, Damian Balsan and David Schroffer talking to us about the emerging payments market. We'll be back after the break.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
What does conscious leadership mean to you? It unites organizations instead of dividing them. By exploring commonly based business challenges, it guarantees an increase in your bottom line. Tune in to Minding Our Business, Creating a Spiritual Economy with your host, Nadine Rogers. Each week, we'll hear from business leaders and learn from their strategies. We'll talk about personal and organizational best practices that you can learn from, and we'll hear from you. Minding Our Business airs live Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Business. Game-changing technologies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up the status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take a coffee break with Game Changers on Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for our special series on today's top big data innovators. Learn about emerging big trends and technologies and how you can grow your business and profit. Startup Focus with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
So you're back with Brett King of Breaking Banks. Just a shout out to some of our Twitter followers who have said hello from a distance and wishing they were here with us. James Wester, Nick Holland, Mike King, Brad Lima. There's a bunch of guys, Matt West. You know, thanks, guys, for tuning in once again. And shame you guys aren't here to be here live and part of the show. Up now, we have Janine
Skoronski.
Skoronski, I'm sorry.
Tricky, Janine. No, it's very good, yeah.
So tell me, you're with AB, American Banker?
Yeah, I edit and blog for American Banker's Bank Think blog, which is basically a place for anyone to come and share their opinions on hot industry topics. talk a lot about innovation there. So,
great. So what do you think is really newsworthy that's come out of this event today, putting your journalist blogger hat on? You know, what has struck you as interesting and is going to be challenging for the industry, the sort of stuff that you want to talk about that's out there?
Well, I think obviously there were a lot of different topics discussed, and tying it together in my own mind, my sense was that moving forward, any future models of banking are probably really going to be hybrids. And I say hybrids in a couple different sense. You talk about regulatory issues here. I think that banks are reluctant to innovate because they're afraid that regulators are going to crack down on them. This is especially true in the short-term lending space. But you have a lot of startups that are getting into those spaces and they're trying to innovate and really reach customer needs. I think those startups, in order to innovate, will need a bank on the back end to kind of make sure that they have a charter, they have money transmitters licenses, the plumbing is working, et cetera. So I think we're going to see more partnerships between e-mesh players and startups. And I also think that the products and services that are going to be most successful, particularly in like a 5-year frame, are going to be hybrids. So you're going to see mobile banking, but you're also going to see traditional checking services, prepaid debit cards, et cetera, moving forward.
So in this sort of, we have the traditional incumbents, and obviously today we talked about a lot of really disruptive out there stuff that's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years. Do you think this is going to be, you know, a place where the incumbents either get this or they don't? And, you know, and if they don't, does that mean they're going to fail or be excluded from playing?
My sense is that traditional players aren't going to be completely disintermediated from the industry, because I think that they have a couple different avenues they could pursue. They can make the choice and say, we're going to be innovative, we're going to come up with new products, we're going to come up with new services, we're going to invest in that. They could say, we're going to partner with startups, or they could say, we're going to provide infrastructure. So I don't think that traditional banks are going to ever completely go away. I think that the function that they serve just might change over time.
Right, there'd be a bit of an evolution.
Right.
So, you know, have you noticed any, you know, in terms of the bank think and the thinking that you guys are doing there, you know, putting your sort of futurist hat on 5 to 10 years out, you know, what's the landscape going to look like? What do you think? Are we going to have a mix of these new players that are emerging to provide value in the ecosystem? And you know, what's it look like 5, 10 years out?
I think I had a little bit of an aha moment when Dave Birch was talking about the future of money, because I realized, I was like, the future of money absolutely is mobile. I think about my baby cousins and how they know now at 2 years old how to use a mobile phone and how to use an iPad. They don't know how to use a credit card. I'm sure, much to their mother's happiness. They don't even know what a credit card is. So they don't know that that's something that they should not abandon or should be reluctant to abandon.
Right.
Instincts
may be quite different.
Right, exactly. I'm not sure if the future of banking is going to be exclusively mobile, because I do think there's going to still be a customer demand for face-to-face interaction on some level, right, whether it's because they think that will make it easier to get a loan, or because sometimes you just can't troubleshoot a problem over a phone and you need to talk to a person. I don't think that's ever going to completely go away. So like I said, my overarching thought was, as we move forward, what we're going to see is really going to be a hybrid of startup companies and traditional companies, a hybrid of mobile products paired with still paper checks or plastic cards that over time will go away. I think they're going to be here for a little while. I don't think 10 years from now they'll exist, but I think 5 years from now there still may be some paper checks around. I'm sorry.
And checks. I mean, seriously.
You need a check to pay your rent, right? Right now?
Yeah, well, you can pay rent in New York with PayPal.
Yeah, I mean, I think Amex was just at AB's prepaid and debit conference, and they explained that the reason that they paired checks with Bluebird was because customers were saying, I can't pay my rent with this. Help me out here. So I think we're stuck with them for a little bit longer.
Well, look, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you for your comments. Really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for having me.
So let's ask Uday Goyal. Uday is... is one of the founders of a very interesting investment group out of Europe called Anthemis Group. And Anthemis has made a specific commitment to really fueling this new layer of bank interface between the customers and these different models of banking. Uday, tell us a bit about Anthemis Group. I know many of the listeners will probably already know you, but tell us about Anthemis's mission and the sort of companies you guys invest in.
So thanks, Brett. So, you know, our vision when we set up Anthemis about 4 years ago, and my co-founding partner was a gentleman with the name of Sean Park. We both came out of very large banking institutions. I came out of Deutsche at the time, having run financial technology there. And Sean came out of Dresdner and had been running digital markets then. We, in our own ways, started to see a sea change for the first time ever, actually precipitated by the global financial crisis, where we could see a real chance of creating innovation in an industry that until now has been fairly stagnant, which is financial services. And so, you know, our mantra is digitally native finance. And I think a lot of the themes that people have been talking about over the course of today are really the themes that underlie where we're going with this, which is rethinking customer acquisition on a retail experience, rethinking how to do peer-to-peer lending, rethinking the whole SME space. And so what we've done is actually seeded 22 companies in that space, including, you know, Moven and apart from Moven, but of course Simple, for those of you who know who Simple is, based on the West Coast, and of course companies like Betterment, Payperks, and the one that probably has now become the best known, the Climate Corporation, which, as many of you may know, got acquired by Monsanto a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, we were proud to be founding investors then. And thematically, everything, you know, what we do with these companies and what we do in the way we invest is actually pretty much the same. We're looking for real disruptive business models that are going to challenge the incumbents, that are going to redefine the way people think about things like customer acquisition, the costs of running a business, that will actually challenge and actually reinvent the space.
So what have you heard at the Young Conference today that's consistent with your thinking about the future of the industry from a banking and payments perspective?
So you know, I think there's a few things that I've heard that are consistent, which, for example,
Or not consistent.
So let me talk about consistent for a second. Mobile as a disruptive change, I think, is consistent. We talked a little bit about how maybe real-time ACH starts to really redefine experiences and actually challenge the incumbent networks such as Visa, MasterCard, Amex, and Discover. We've heard some of that. So these are sort of technologies and changes in the market which will create some real change. I think what is not consistent is that people still believe that there will be a large role for certain incumbents in the value chain, which I certainly don't believe. So, for example, there was a discussion where people likened the networks, i.e. the Amex, MasterCard, Visas, to the large TV networks in the United States. Now, I would say to you that what drives viewership in the large TV networks is the ability to fund very large projects, which then drives viewers to view those projects, and that's what drives the figures. And the smaller stations can't actually fund those size of projects. So there's a content element to it. Whereas I liken retail banking, payments, all the areas that we talk about, closer to the cellular networks or the mobile phone networks, as we call them, around the world, where 10 years ago the ARPUs or how much revenue they were making per person were very significant, but very quickly they became commoditized and yes, became what we call dumb pipes. And so people were innovating on top of that.
So, you know, now you push a button and your call goes through. You don't think about all the technology involved in that. And so same with payments. It becomes more about, you know, what the payment enables you to do. So your smartphone is no longer just about making telephone calls into all this other stuff over that network. Maybe that's a good analogy.
No, I think if you think about it, you know, what we do with our phone today, actually, if you look at mobile phones, the biggest growing revenue class for the carriers is actually data. It's not even voice anymore.
Yeah.
So most people who carry a phone around use it mainly for the data experience and not for the voice. So the carriers have had to reinvent their business model to move away from carrying voice and maximizing ARPU. And actually what they do today is reduce the cost, the call costs to a de minimis level, essentially to sell the value-added services around phone, which is basically data or a bunch of other services. Or if you go to Kenya, you know, they created M-Pesa, or that, you know, there are various things that the carriers are doing. And so these value-added services is where, and again, coming back, I mean, you know, even if you take your example, Brett, with Movin, what you're doing is you're innovating at the customer interface level and actually bringing a really new user experience to the customer away from basically the plumbing that sits at the back, which no user is really interested in.
Exactly. Abstracting the complexity and friction is really
key. Yeah, the Apple concept, as we call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, and great to see you again today. Just in the last couple of minutes, we're going to invite Judy Reinerson. You know, Judy's on the legal side, I think. Judy, tell us about Brian Cave.
Well, Brian Cave is actually a global law firm. We're about 1,000 lawyers. We have offices in London and Paris and Shanghai. I'm the head of the payments group, and we are very focused on the U.S. payments because they are the craziest laws when it comes to payments.
So, unfortunately, we don't have a huge amount of time left, so let's just jump straight into it. Tell me about the legal and regulatory challenges of being a really innovative economy, because we have all these amazing disruptive innovations going on, and the U.S. is tending to put more and more regulation, making, you know, sort of tying the incumbents and existing networks more and more in place. What's this clash going to produce?
Well, it's really depressing, because I work with a lot of startup companies who have fabulous ideas and really want to take care of customers and consumers. And because of the bifurcation of our laws, we've got a few federal laws, but we have all of those state laws.
Right.
And it is it's a huge barrier for entry. And, I mean, I really think there should be some kind of a safe harbor for a small company that needs to get its foot in the door. Why should the same laws that apply to, you know, Google and PayPal apply to, you know, two or three guys who are just out of college and who have a great idea? They're engineers and programmers. There's got to be an answer. And try to explain this to someone from outside the U.S. who are trying to move in. They can't get over it. It really is a terribly old-fashioned and complex, needlessly complex, legal
system.
Landscape. Sorry about that.
Look, I'm sorry that we don't have much more time to talk about this, because we have run out of time today, but thank you for joining us, and keep fighting the good fight on that front. So,
you're welcome.
So that was Breaking Banks this week. We were live from Google in New York, talking to a bunch of players trying to figure out the payment space. Mobile is going to be key. Distributed banking is going to happen. The incumbents need to create compelling use cases for customers. That's some of the outcomes from the unconference in New York with Consult Hyperion, MyPay, and also the team at Google New York. You've been with Breaking Banks, and I'm your host, Brett King. Thanks for joining us again this week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.